Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Okay, hello everybody. This is Evan Basilik and we are here for episode number 333, special number of the Azure Podcast. We're recording this on Wednesday, June 3rd. My God, it's June already. 2020. And we have here today with us Candace Jackson to talk about TLS 1.0 deprecation. It's one of those things that you probably didn't pay attention to, but it is super important. You need to be paying attention to it. And we'll get back to her in just a minute. But Kale and Cynthia are here with me. Folks, what kind of announcement you want to talk about today?
I had one that we missed out earlier about GitHub Actions that also came out from Build. So back in November, GitHub Actions for Azure became GA'd, but during Build, we announced that GitHub Actions for Azure is now integrated into Visual Studio Code, Azure CLI, as well as Azure Portal. And really the main intention is for more people to get into building these pipelines, regardless of which platform they're most used to. So with the integration across these different tool chains, developers can really start building out these GitHub Actions from wherever they feel most comfortable.
Yeah, that's great. I think I saw that announcement. Everything's coming in VS Code these days, as well as Visual Studio. It's amazing. Kale, anything you want to highlight? I don't see any blockchain stuff.
I got something related to blockchain, so it has to be. So for those times when you can't use a blockchain, which I can't imagine when those are, there's another database offering that was announced, and I don't think we talked about it yet, and we should probably delve into it deeper in a future podcast, but is SQL Edge. We keep talking about Edge browsers and Edge networking and all kinds of other Edge things. And now we have SQL Edge that's in preview that was announced at Build. And basically, it's a kind of small footprint SQL Server engine that's kind of optimized for IoT, as well as there's some built-in AI stuff to this. I haven't played with this thing yet, but it looks like it's been kind of optimized for that kind of workload of like a semi-connected workload IoT, but also giving you some of the benefits of like the AI world. So something I think we should probably delve into, but I was looking back through the book of news to find things that we had forgot about. And this was one that popped up. So I wanted to draw people's attention to it.
And we should have asked Ganesh about it the other day. I'm sure he's got some insight into that one.
Yeah.
The one that I wanted to highlight, and this is actually, I don't know if we've ever done one of these before, but this is actually a big deal. So the older versions of our container integration, network integration for AKS has a security vulnerability. And this is just things that are from prior to April of 2019. And we'll put a link in the show notes. But if you're running a very old build of AKS with CNI, you definitely want to check this out. It's a pretty decent vulnerability in it. And it clearly is put you at risk if you're doing that again. Most people are not going to be running stuff this old. But people absolutely do. So encourage people to go check this out, make sure they're not vulnerable. If you are vulnerable, it's a quick and easy process to upgrade to the later implementation. That should take care of you, but something to be aware of from the security side. Anything else, y'all? Okay. So why don't we, at this point, kind of hand things over to our special guest, Candace. Candace, can you, introduce yourself and tell us what you do here at Microsoft?
My name is Candace Jackson, and I'm a PM, and I work on the vulnerability management team. I don't think that's our official name, so Vlad is going to probably fire me because I don't actually know the official name of our team. But we are responsible for basically, scanning and vulnerability management across the fleet, across the Azure fleet. And the TLS project fits really well into that scope, because we are looking at data that's moving in transit across our network and trying to make sure that it is as secure as possible.
I think you're right. I mean, TLS, it's funny. I'm going to date myself because I'm sure somewhere during the show I'll call it SSL, even though that's not been something anybody uses, you know, regularly for a number of years now. But, you know, I mean, these days with everything going across the internet and even within the data center, right, it's quote unquote should be treated as internet traffic. So everything is encrypted these days. This is a big deal to see one of the older protocols actually get deprecated, and people actually have to be preparing for this, right? You can't just not just flip a bit somewhere and all of a sudden it's all just going to magically work for you.
That is correct. We you said you attended the talk that I gave, and one of the premises of the talk was that TLS deprecation is like Godzilla, because if you don't handle it correctly, it can destroy a lot of things in your network, and you know, destroy a lot of things and cause service outages. So it is something that we need to handle in a controlled and calm and very thoughtful manner. You can't just go and turn it off and everything is going to work. There has to be some, you know, before planning, during planning, and after planning in place.
So can you, I mean, this is something you're doing this for our own internal applications, right, at this point. And you know, we're clearly talking to our customers as well. But is there sort of a playbook that you can share with customers that we're using internally in terms of like, you know, how would you go about testing this? And what's the, you know, what are good and bad ways to go about, you know, validating how you're impacted and what the potential impact is?
So though it's very, very Windows focused, the paper that was written, Andrew Marshall from what was at the time TWC and is now CELA, called Solving the TLS Problem. It basically walks through the same playbook that we're using very much internally. Obviously, it's very Windows focused, but the same, except for the focus on S-Channel, which is a Windows technology stack, the steps are basically the same. You need to go and like understand what your dependencies are, find all the components, remove them, do a lot of testing before you turn it off officially. And so as I said, the name of the paper is Solving the TLS Problem. If you want, I can send you a link to it so that you can post it with the podcast.
Yeah, that would be great. This has been something we've been on the Microsoft side clearly thinking about for a long time now. Right? Mm-hmm. What's kind of triggering doing this now versus, you know, 2 years down the road or even 5 years previously?
We've actually been working on this problem for several years. It's just an indication of the complexity of the problem. And what triggered the major push and involved security was PCI and FedRAMP basically signaled that they were going to be changing their policies to determine what versions of protocols and cipher suites they would consider compliant to get their accreditation. And so that was really what pushed us to start like aggressively looking internally to see what are we doing internally and how can we help? What are we doing internally with our services? How can we fix ourselves? And more importantly, how can we fix our customers? Or how can we help our customers fix themselves? Is a better way of saying it.
So if our customers have like legacy application, is this pretty common that they would use TLS 1.0? as your protocol, and if, say, I'm inheriting a bunch of stuff that now I need to go fix, like, how do I approach that?
Yeah, so the problems that we had in doing this internally are very much the same that our problems that our external customers would have, but the external customers don't have the same internal resources that Microsoft would have, I guess is the way to say it. So think about it like this. You were talking about SSL and dating yourself, but when we were moving aggressively, trying to get customers to move away from SSL to TLS 1.0, one of the things that was very common guidance was to tell everybody, hard code TLS 1.0, because we want to make sure that you're only using 1.0, because we know SSL is broken, so we want to be using 1.0. That is now coming back to haunt us, because all of those customers and all those service teams, all those engineers basically followed our guidance and they hard-coded TLS 1.0 everywhere. And so what we're now trying to do is to get to raise awareness of the fact that you may not even have gone and explicitly written a code statement that said use TLS 1.0 as your protocol, but you may be using a component that is really old or sometimes even fairly modern that is using TLS 1.0 just because of the way it was built. And so that's why we tell customers, you know, we give customers guidance about looking at all of your components. There are known components that we have identified that we tell customers, this one is definitely known to be a problem. So if you're using this, rebuild, move to a later version, and then just aggressively test.
Okay. So for someone that like have very little understanding of networking, like what is TLS even, or what's SSL, and why is it deprecating?
So TLS was the, so it, they're basically all forms of, obviously they're all algorithms that allow us to encrypt the data as it's moving from point A to point B. And SSL was the original version. There was SSL V2 and V3, and then we moved to TLS 1.0. And so even it gave it a new name, but TLS 1.0 and SSL are basically, you know, I guess children, or I guess siblings or relatives, where SSL was a older version of the protocol and TLS is a more modern version of the SSL protocol. And the reason why we are concerned about it is because it right now it's about 20 years old. And there are inherent issues with the protocol that we think make it vulnerable to attack. Now, having said that, we give this caveat all the time. The Microsoft implementation of TLS has no known vulnerabilities. The thing that concerns, you know, people like our crypto experts are, the fact is that there are no known vulnerabilities. The word known in that statement. So there are concerns that the protocol may have issues that we just don't know about, and that's why we want to move away from it as expeditiously as possible. While at the same time understanding that our customers are going to have a harder time doing this than we will, and so we're not forcing a deprecation date. We're just trying to raise public awareness and give as much information as possible and give as much guidance as possible so that customers can move away from it in a manner that supports their business.
I'm not even going to try and quote the numbers because I don't remember them, but doesn't this in a lot of ways come down to that the algorithms that the older versions of encryption are using can be brute forced, and as everything can be brute forced to some extent, but as computational power has increased, the ability to brute force the older ones in an amount of time plus the vulnerabilities has pushed us to new algorithms, which are, you know, can't be forced in that sense and have no vulnerabilities. So I think that's sort of why we want to see people, you know, move to these newer ones. And this is why these compliance organizations, right, are focusing on these, you know, later versions and are deprecating the other ones. Does that help, Cynthia?
Thank you.
So when, you know, you kind of alluded to it, Candace, you know, we ourselves are using some of this and we ourselves may probably have some gotchas for it. And I've seen a lot of announcements recently, you know, Service XYZ is, you know, no longer supporting clients using, you know, TLS 1.0 as of this day and the like. I know we're not forcing our customers to use it in their solutions or anything, but are we forcing that internally on ourselves just to make ourselves kind of as secure as possible?
So for internal traffic, we have the guidance that our goal is 100% of our services are TLS 1.2 compliant, meaning there is no TLS 1.0 or 1.1 negotiated, except in some very rare cases of services decomming or something is just really old and it's going to take us longer to update it. Right. But for anything that is customer facing, we've made it very much a business decision. When what we've asked is ensure that what you offer as part of the handshake is always TLS 1.2. And then that way it is the customer's decision to negotiate down. And then that way, and then we can, and at the same time, we ask our service teams to, you know, communicate and advise your customers to move, but we understand that they may not be able to. And a good example of the way I talk about a service team, and I won't name the names because I don't know how much information I get in, but I'll give a good example of a service team that actually did it in a way that we consider a very positive interaction. Now, they had a bunch of things for them that kind of were the perfect storm of rightness, but this is the way it worked for them. They were basically a web UI that worked through, do you guys know what Akamai is?
Yes. Yeah, the okay. CDN solution.
Yes. Okay. So they were a web service that basically is sitting behind Akamai. And so everything that was behind Akamai, they were able to go and say, we're going to fix this and make it TLS 1.2 compliant so that it meets the, you know, Microsoft security requirements. But Akamai, as their endpoint, was still able to, for their older customers, for their client, for their customers that were using older clients, still accept the 1.0 connection. They terminated it and then send it back into the services 1.2. However, this team was able to, because they were able to detect what user agent was coming in, they were able to, you know, detect when user agent was coming in. They made assumptions about what was happening with the customer and was able to direct them to pay to content that said, hey, we're asking you to go and upgrade your browser because we're seeing that you're using something older. It doesn't support TLS 1.2, and we're trying to move, make this move as a company. And so they were able to influence their customers to move to the upgraded version of the browser. And then once they saw via the data that was coming in through Akamai that everybody was using 1.2, they were able to configure the Akamai endpoint to only then at that point accept 1.2. And that was a really good experience, and it was a really good illustration of what we really want to try to get to is we have the service set up. They're doing everything right internally, and then they work to influence their customers to move in the direction externally, but they don't force them. They give them a timeline, and they give them feedback, and they understand what's happening with the customers. And that's really the perfect storm of what we want to happen with our customers. However, as I said, this service was very, you know, very unique. Not every service is going to be able to detect what the customer is doing on such an individual level, nor are they going to be able to always redirect them over to other content. So that's what it kind of illustrates the good of what we want to do, but it also illustrates a lot of the gaps, and we need to be able to identify and talk to our customers and encourage them to move.
Yeah. One question I had around this, Candace, is like, as you were discussing, like, you know, that one sounds a little bit tricky for people to actually even figure out, like, why this was happening or the downgrade that was happening. But, like, customers who are not aware, like, maybe even, like, which one they're using, right? What are some of, like, the common tools or, like, common techniques, if you could share any of those, to say, hey, this is a red flag? Or is there any, like, common thing that people do to kind of detect if they're vulnerable?
So some of the tools, and we also use these in various forms internally. We recommend Wireshark, though Wireshark is one of those services that, or one of those tools that does require a bit of knowledge to understand how to use, but Wireshark is a good one. There's also SSL Labs. If you have any externally facing endpoints, they give you a very comprehensive report about what protocols and what cipher suites are being negotiated. And another one is an open source tool called SSLize. And it is, again, a tool that you can download and install and you can run internally, and it will basically tell you what is being negotiated. And it works
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and it works obviously for Windows and for Linux, so it gives a pretty robust a report about what's happening.
Yeah, I was interested too. Like, if I'm using a modern browser, let's say, you know, Edge or Chrome or something like that, and I hit one of these endpoints that's using this old stuff, why even know it? Or is there like a little red thing that's going to come up and tell me, or nothing happens?
I'm not sure if our browsers actually give you that indication. I know that the browsers allow you to configure whether or not you want to accept or visit, you know, use older protocols and cipher suites. I don't know if they give you a visual indication. That's a good one question, and I'll follow up and I'll let you know.
Awesome.
Sorry, just making notes here. Another thing I thought about, and I probably should have said this at the beginning, but I forgot, was when I have been working on this for so long, I basically have developed my own shorthand, and so I don't always explain myself fully. So whenever I say we're deprecating TLS 1.0, for Microsoft, that means we're trying to deprecate TLS 1.0, 1.1, and any cipher suites that we consider to be weak or non-compliant, and those include 3DES, MD5, and RC4-based algorithms. But when I talk, I only ever say TLS 1.0 because trying to say that all the time is a big handful. And a common question that we get from people is, okay, you say we're going to deprecate 1.0. Why can't we just move to 1.1? Well, first of all, the standards want us to move to 1.2. And secondly, there is very little technical difference between 1.0 and 1.1. So in the move to go modern, we're considering 1.2 and higher.
So does this, we're sort of making a leap then that sets people up for success for a while now at this point, rather than making some incremental change that they're going to then have to go redo, you know, in a fairly short period of time.
Well, yes. Are you guys familiar with the concept of crypto agility?
No.
That's kind of a concept that I always think of as the move to the next platform shouldn't be a massive effort. And so the reason why I bring this up is because while we're right now focused on 1.2, 1.3 is in the pipeline. So when we're making these technical changes to support 1.2, most of our services should be easily able to adopt 1.3 once it's ready in the platform. Some services, because of technical decisions that they've made that will work best for them now, may have to do some extra work. And we may see customers in some of the same boats. Some customers will be able to just smoothly transition to 1.3. Some customers will have to do a little bit of work. But considering how long it takes for us to adopt new protocols, they have the time to be planning that work out.
So don't hard code your version again is sort of one of the things I heard from that.
Basically, yeah, part of the thing we ask is remove the hard coding and, you know, don't do it again. As I said, we understand that there are some special cases where teams have to hard code, but we are trying to not hard code as much as possible. I see you guys smiling and I don't know if that's good or bad.
No, it's good. It's all good.
I got a couple of questions, if I may. Do we have 1 minute?
Yeah, go ahead. It's fine.
So apologies. English is my third language, I guess. But I was under impression that perfect storm means, usually used in negative connotation.
It normally is. For me, this was just when I say perfect storm, I just meant all of the events align correctly. It normally is sometimes used as a negative phrase, but for me, I use it more as a perfect storm is everything aligned correctly. So now you have this massive, awesome thing happening. The storm itself can be good or bad, but the fact that it's happening in my parlance is still pretty cool.
I'll take your word for it. The second question is, it would be good to call out that, you know, the primary issue is not with browser connections, actually it's with APIs. So I think that, you know, maybe we should put an emphasis on this too. And okay. The most trivial litmus test would be to set up a machine that you're using to be 1.2 exclusive and simply see what breaks. I mean, as long as you're playing within the test boundaries, of course.
Yes, and that actually is called out by the solving the TLS problem. That's one of the mm-hmm. things we asked him to do. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Sounds good. No other questions. Thank you.
So, and Vlad is right. Browser scenarios are easy. API scenarios are much harder. There are a lot of layers of complexity to understand what's going on. Some of the tools will give you a lot of detailed information about what is being communicated, but you still have to do the work of understanding what the API is actually trying to do.
Okay. All right. I need to drop and join another call. So thanks, everybody.
No, this has been great, Candace. I really appreciate you sharing your insights here, like, you know, about this problem and how people should, you know, even shared some of the tools and things that would be useful for our partners and customers to think about as they're doing this. And definitely we'll get those links from you and put them in the show notes for folks who want to do that, as well as if you have any others helpful information that you want to share, we can put that in the show. But I just want to give you an opportunity if there's anything else you wanted to share with our listeners before we close up.
Yes, just continue to monitor the Microsoft document site as we move forward and start as we shift from our internal focus to more, you know, communicating with customers and basically talking to them about what we're trying to do. We'll be trying to put up, you know, as many articles and how-to tips and it points links to images or any other infrastructure that we're creating that helps support your move to TLS 1.2. So continue to monitor. If you don't see something, reach out. We'll try to get it up as quickly as possible. But that's what we're working on now, is just trying to create the public-facing documentation that helps customers do this. And we just, again, want to assure customers, our goal is not to break you. Our goal is to help you move to security in as, you know, reasonable a fashion as possible.
That's awesome. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter @AzurePodcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.